All right, we'll say good morning. A beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Tzadik Vav 96, and we are picking up Tzadik Hem Beis 95. We're actually going to start from Amar Rava. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 15 lines up from the bottom. We thank our sponsors for our share this morning, our Talmud Torah sponsors, Justin and Abigail Rosemore, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in memory of their beloved son, Kobe, Chaim Yaakov David, Ben Yosef Tzadok. We also thank our monthly sponsor, our Talmud Torah sponsors, Alan and Sue Meyerowitz and family, Jason, Deborah, Justin, Rebecca, Mindy Simukh, and all of the grandchildren, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in the merit of a Refuah Shleimah for Sue Shulamis Tova Bas Mindel. And we thank our week of learning sponsors, Adam and Allison Steinmetz, Sherry and Alan Steinmetz, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in memory of Harriet Steinmetz, Chaya Bas Meir Zichron Livracha, on the occasion of her fourth yard site. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the Neshavas will have an Aliyah, and those who require a Refuah will have one together with Kol Choli. So, on a bosa with that, let us begin. So, Amar Rava. So, we'll say this is actually a fascinating Gemara, because essentially we're going to get a little bit of a crash course on Hilchos Tumen Tara vis-a-vis Kelim utensils. So, Amar Rava, Chamesh Midos B'Kli Cheres. There are five different categories when it comes to a Kli Cheres. Nikev, if the kli cheretz, if it has a hole in it, so kimotzi mashke, if the hole is large enough that liquid could seep out of the utensil, tar milatabi gistra. So we'll see, remember again, we've spoken about this before, a kli cheretz, even once it's broken, could still go ahead and have the status of what's called a gistra. Gistra is a shard. So we'll say, so a shard, if large enough, can still go ahead and be utilized as a utensil. And if that is the case, then ultimately, again, it could still have certain levels of tumah. So the Gemara says as follows. If you have a kli cheres that has the hole, that has a hole in it, the size that allows for liquid to go ahead and seep out, ultimately, again, it is no longer usable, or it no longer has the status. It can no longer be a gistra, a shard. But it is still a utensil that is whole enough, to sanctify mechata. So we'll say, remember again, the mechatas piece ultimately is the waters for the paraduma. Remember, for paraduma, it says that everything has to be mixed. Mayim chayim el keli, inside of a kli, inside of a utensil. So even if the utensil has a hole, which allows liquid to seep out of it, that doesn't fully compromise its status as a kli, and can still be used for paraduma purposes. Nikev kakones mashka. But if the utensil is second category now, if the utensil has a hole that is large enough that allows liquid to seep in, like if you were to immerse it in water, the water would seep in, tarma the kadesh ba mechatos, it can no longer be used as a kli for mechatos, for paraduma, va'adayin klihu lahachshir bo zroim. But ultimately, again, it is still a utensil. Lahachshir bo zroim. I will say, now Rashi points out over lahachshir bo zroim hazroim besocho dikitlushininhu va'afil rabban ashe nekev zeh roi lahariach lachluch izakarka. So we'll say, interestingly enough, if you have a utensil that has a hole that is large enough to allow for water to seep in, or liquid to seep in, so ultimately, again, such a utensil is no longer usable for paraduma. But interestingly enough, if you were to plant something in such a utensil, the contents of that kli would be considered to be detached from the ground, and therefore halacha lemaisa ra'ui lekabel tuma. Nikev kishoresh katan. What happens if the hole, if the kli, if the utensil has a hole the size of a small root? Tar milahach shiozra. And we'll say at that point in time, so the contents of that utensil, if the utensil were to be placed on the ground, would have the status of items that are attached to the ground. Va'adayin klihu lekabel zvozesim. But Rabbi says still has the status of a kli, legabe the ability to be mekabel tuma. Because as we're going to see again, when we say mekabel lekabel zesim, what that means is, as long as the hole is not so large that something the size of an olive would fall out of it, halacha lemaisa, it still has the status of a utensil. And because it has the status of a utensil, therefore it's roi lekabel tuma. So the Gemara says, nikev kimotzi zesim. What happens if the utensil has a hole that is large enough to allow for olives to fall out of the utensil? Tahar milekabel bo zesim. ultimately what? It is tahar. The term the Kabbalah Zesim Rose means that ultimately, again, it is now a type of utensil that to a certain degree has lost its identity as a utensil. However, Va'adain Klihu Lekabal Bo Rimonim, but it still is a utensil in that it has the ability to go ahead and hold pomegranates, which Rose means if you were to take now, what the Gemara is suggesting is as follows. In general, if a utensil has a hole that is so large that olives, that something the size of an olive would fall out of it, it's pretty much no longer a utensil, right? It has lost its identity as a utensil. There's one exception to that rule. What's the exception? If halacha l'maaseh, a person repurposes the utensil and goes in and says, you know what, I'm going to use this as a utensil to hold pomegranates, then remember again, if it's a utensil to hold pomegranates, even if it has the hole the size of an olive, the utensil itself is still usable. So if halacha l'maaseh, you repurpose it to go out and use pomegranates, then it's good. Then ultimately it regains its status as a kli. However, nikev kimotzi rimonim, tar miklum. I will say if you have a utensil that ultimately, again, has a hole that is so big that it can't even retain pomegranates, at that point in time, it has lost its identity as a utensil altogether. And therefore, again, I will say, once it's lost its identity as a utensil, it is no longer mekabel tumo. Vim hokof tzamit psil. But if halacha l'maisa, you went ahead and you put a covering, right? Summit pistil means you put a covering on this utensil, then ad sheyif chas rubo. Then ultimately it's able to retain its identity as a utensil until most of the utensil itself is breached. So we'll say, so interestingly enough, Rava says these are the five different categories of kelim, of utensils. Amar Ravasi, shamati, I heard, klicheres shiuro kemotzi rimon. I heard in general that a utensil is considered to be a utensil until it has a hole that is so big that it doesn't have the ability to retain something the size of a pomegranate. Meaning, if the hole in the utensil is so big that it's the size of a pomegranate, that's when the utensil loses its identity as a utensil. But anything smaller than that allows it to remain a utensil. To which the Gemara says, "Amli Rava, Shema lo shamata ele b'mukaf tzamid psil." Maybe you heard that when the utensil has a covering, right? Because we'll say, remember, the presence of a covering allows ultimately, again, even for a much larger breach in the utensil while still retaining the utensil identity. I v'harava huda amar mukov tzamid psil achiv chasrubo. But one second, Rava said that if it has a covering, the utensil retains its identity until the majority of the utensil is breached or opened. Look, so which one is it? Lokasha, top of tzadik vav, habravravi, habazutri. So everything depends ultimately, again, on the size of the utensil. If you're talking about a very large utensil, then ultimately, again, if it has a cover, it is considered to be an intact utensil until the majority of the utensil is breached. If it's a smaller utensil, then once it has a hole the size of a rimon, of a pomegranate, it loses its identity as a utensil. Amar Abasi, Shonin, we learned, Kli Cheres, Shiuro Bekonis Mashka. Let's say for a Kli Cheres, ultimately, again, it retains its identity until it has a hole that is large enough to allow for liquid to enter it. Velo Amru Motzi Mashka, and in general, again, a hole that is large enough to allow for liquid to exit the utensil is only significant elele inyan gistera. So we'll say, what this is saying is as follows. Halacha l'maaseh, if you have a utensil that broke and you're utilizing one of the shards as a utensil, if that shard develops a hole, which is a small hole, in other words, it's enough ultimately, again, to allow liquid to leave the utensil, which apparently is like the smallest type of hole. So if you have a shard that has a hole that is so small that it doesn't allow liquid to enter, but it does allow liquid to exit the utensil, that causes the gistera, the shard, to lose its identity as a kli. Why? My time. Rav Nachman, omrim have gistera le gistera. Because no one says bring a shard to repair the shard. So we'll say, so again, it actually makes a lot of sense. What it's saying is, in general, the halacha is, if a utensil has a small hole, right, and let's take a step back. In general, the very simple way to understand this is as follows. A utensil is considered a utensil as long as it functions as a utensil. Once it no longer functions as a utensil, it loses its designation as a utensil. At which point in time does a utensil no longer function as a utensil when it has a hole? So the Shaila Rabbosa is, how large does the hole have to be in order to compromise the usability or utility of the utensil? So that's subject. So the Gemara is just suggesting over here as follows. In general, if you have a hole that's so small that it just allows liquid to seep out, in general, that will not compromise the utensil integrity. There is an exception to that. The exception to that is a gistera. If you have a shard, what's a shard? I had a whole utensil, the utensil broke, but there's a piece that's large enough to still function as a kli. What the Gemara is just suggesting is, if that shard develops even a very small hole, we're done. It is no longer considered to be a halachic utensil, and halacha lemaisa, there no longer, it loses identity. Why? Because once a shard develops a hole, at any point in time, the Gemara says, no one says, bring the shard to repair the shard. In other words, we'll say the shard is already a piece. So therefore, once it becomes compromised, in any way, generally, people no longer use it as a utensil. Amar ulo, pligi bat shem rabbi ma rabba. Two Tanaim argued about this in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yossi bar Avin, Rabbi Yossi bar Zabda. Two Rabbi Yossis. One Rabbi Yossi bar Avin, Rabbi Yossi bar Zabda. Chad amar kimotzi rimon. Chad amar kishoresh katan. So we'll say, interestingly enough, this machlokis over here was in the following case. Rashi points out Behechshas Rav. So you're both saying, remember how we got into this a little bit? We got into this because we were talking about an atzitz nakov, right? The perforated flower pot. And we were trying to figure out, right? Rabbi Shimon in general holds that anything planted in an atzitz nakov, right? Anything planted in a perforated flower pot is still considered to be detached from the ground. That's Rabbi Shimon's Shita. So then the Gemara got into discussing, but one second, according to Rabbi Shimon, what happens if you have, let's say, a potted plant, and there's a hole on the bottom of the plant, literally right opposite the root? Would Rabbi Shimon still say that that's considered to be detached? So that that's how we got into this whole discussion about holes in utensils. Now we're kind of looping back to that, and this machlok, this Rabbi Yossi bar Avin, Rabbi Yossi bar Zadda, is in the following, that if you have a potted plant, how big of a hole do you need to have in the utensil, ultimately, again, for the potted plant to be considered to be attached to the ground? So ultimately, again, one opinion said, kimotzi rimon, if you have a hole that is large enough, ultimately, again, for the size of a pomegranate, ultimately, again, that would be enough. The chad amar kishoresh katon, and the other opinion said, ultimately, what? The size of a small root. So we'll say, so interestingly enough, both of them are agreeing that halacha lemaisa, once you have a hole in the pot, ultimately that allows for the potted plant to be considered to be attached to the ground. Their machlokes is, how large does the hole have to be? Now we'll say, understand, these are two extreme shitas. Motzi rimon, the size of a pomegranate, is like the largest shear, right? Meaning everyone agrees the most lenient position will hold that you can go up to a hole the size of a pomegranate. And meaning once you get to the hole the size of a pomegranate, everyone is agreeing. There's no one who says that this utensil has the status of a utensil any longer. So one opinion says, when is the potted plant considered to be attached to the ground? When there is a hole the size of a pomegranate. And the second opinion says, no, even a hole as small as the size of a root, which obviously is a tiny hole, that has the ability to allow the potted plant to be attached to the ground. So Moshe Simamish, two extreme shitas. This Simanach, and the Remeitz, remember it is, so we'll say the way to remember this is, remember again, this is a borrowed phrase. Whether you do a lot or whether you do a little, the ikra, the most important thing is that your heart is directed towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara says the way to remember this machlok is between the Rabbi Yossis, is to remember Echad Hamarba, that's the position of the Rimon. Echad Hamamit, that's the position ultimately again of the Shoresh Katan. Good, so that's the Machlokes. Amnav Chinna Bar Kahana Mishrei de Rabbi Eliezer. Kli Cheres Shi'urei Kimotzi Zeisim. So Rabbi say you have Rav Huna Bar Kahana saying in Rabbi Eliezer that for an earthenware utensil, once it has a hole the size of olives, so something the size of an olive could fall out of it, it has lost its identity as a utensil. So Mark Shisha Bredi Rava Misayim Bar Mishrei de Rabbi Eliezer. And once you have an earthenware utensil that has a hole the size of an olive, it effectively becomes like a utensil made out of manure, or made out of stone, or made out of earth. So most remember again, all of these materials are not mekabel tuma. So therefore, Allah Almighty said, so again, Rashi says over here, Hariyu kikli galalim, mishenikev kimotzi zayis afil yachtum l'rimonim, v'hadisnan kol ba'li batim kshir k'rimonim. So ultimately again, says the Gemara, says Rav, Rav Chinina Bar Kahana, that halacha lemaisa, once the utensil develops all the size of olives, halacha lemaisa, it loses its identity as a kli and becomes like one of the other utensils that is not even capable of being mekabel tuma. Shem mekabel tuma, lo medirei tor, lo medirei sofrim. Ultimately, again, so once a utensil develops a hole the size of olives, it loses its identity as a kli. Once it loses, I think we mentioned this yesterday, but you know, obviously, once a utensil loses its identity as a kli, as a utensil, there are a number of ramifications. Number one, if the utensil was tame, the tuma goes away, right? Because remember, once the utensil no longer has the halachic designation as a kli, the tuma status leaves. That's one. Now we were also introduced to a new ramification. Once it's no longer a kli, anything that is inside of it, let's say you have a plant, something growing inside of it, once then you would then put down that kli on the ground, everyone would agree that halacha lemaisa, the contents are considered to be attached because it's no longer a kli. And once it's attached, it's mechubad lekarka, you have all these other ramifications. There's other ramifications as well. Once it's not a kli, for example, it cannot be used to mix the para aduma concoction. So there's a number of different ramifications to losing your kli status. Therefore, the Gemara suggests, once you have a utensil that has a hole the size of an olive, ultimately, again, it becomes like these other utensils that are not even capable of being mekabel tuma, not midaraisa, not midirabanan, uleinyan samit psil. However, if you have a utensil that has a stopper, right, that has some type of cover, ad shevi ifchas rubo, it retains its identity as a kli until the majority of the utensil ultimately is breached. We'll say hajr alach hamatzniyah, yeshakayach. Let's go weiter. Hazorik mirushus hayochid lirushus haralim. So I just do want to point out, just as an aside, we don't have to go through it now, but I will just tell you that the five categories of Rava. So when Rava says, I should really just end off with this. When Rava says chamesh midos bekli charas, and he goes through the five categories, I do want to point out to you something quite fascinating, which is that the Rambam and Hilchos Kelim, in Perak Yutes Sif Beis, does in fact codify this lahalacha. So this is very interesting, because a lot of times when it comes to Tumah and Tahara, we kind of leave off and we're not exactly sure sometimes what the halacha lamais is. But I just want to point out that again, these five categories of Rava that we saw in Amud Beis is what the Rambam adapts or accepts halacha lamais. It's really very interesting. Good. Hadron lach matzniyah boseh shkoyach and mazel tov. Hazorik mir shoshech lo shesh rabbi. Boseh, let's go back there. So interestingly enough, we're a little bit back to Otsa. Right, back to transferring items from one domain to another. So this is really quite fascinating. If somebody throws something from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim, or Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid, Chayif, ultimately again, such a person is Chayif. So both say, so remember, up until now, we've been focusing on transferring an item, either by handing it or by walking it, one domain to another. Why? What happens if you throw it? And the Mishnah is telling you whether you throw something from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaRabim or from Rishus HaRabim to Rishus HaYochid, ultimately, again, you are Chayiv. So the Gemara says, Rishus HaYochid, Rishus HaYochid, or Rishus HaRabim Bamsa. What happens if you throw something? It's an interesting case. What happens if you throw something from Rishus HaYochid to Rishus HaYochid, but there's a Rishus HaRabim in the middle? So, right, so we'll say, so again, simplest case, as we're going to see, my neighbor, right, I live on a street. Let's assume for a moment my street is a Rishus HaRabim, public domain. My neighbor is across the street. I throw an object from my house to my neighbor's house, but the object, so it begins in Rishus HaYochid, lands in Rishus HaYochid, but goes through a Rishus HaRabim. What's the halacha? Rabbi Akiva Mechayiv. Rabbi Akiva says that you're Chayiv, and ultimately Vechachamim Potrin. The Chachamim say that you are Potter. So, case. So, what's an example of a case like this? Shtei Gusteros, Zu Keneged Zu. Literally, a Gustera is a balcony. Let's say you have two balconies. So, the imagery that the Gemara saw is, let's say you have two apartment buildings across from each other. Shtei Gusteros, Zu Keneged Zu, Bishus Harabim. So, let's say if you have two balconies, ultimately, again, Rashi says over here, Zizin Hayotzim in Akosel, Umanichra Lav Nesarim Lahalad. So, again, you have two, literally means protrusions. You have two protrusions from two buildings, from two structures. Zukineged zu birshus harabim hamoshit vazorek mizulazu pater. So if I will say, if one were to go ahead and, well, again, we'll define the nature of this case. But let's say you have two balconies facing each other across Rosh Hashanah. Sorry, so one is on one side of Rosh Hashanah and one is on the other side of Rosh Hashanah. There's Rosh Hashanah in the middle. If you were to go ahead and hand something from one balcony or from one gustura to another, ultimately, again, you would be Potter. You would be Potter. Again, we'll see why that is. Hayushtehen bidiyuta achos. However, if halacha lemaisa, you were to go ahead and both balconies were to be on the same side, hamoshit chayiv vazorek Potter. Ultimately, again, one who would hand would be chayiv, and one who would throw would be Potter. So we'll say, so just to illustrate this case, if you could imagine the following situation. If you were to have a building, let's just illustrate this a little bit differently than the Mishnah. Let's say you were to have two apartment buildings, okay? And there were to be two balconies. And let's say the two buildings are across the width of the Rishus Harabin, right? So what the Mishnah is suggesting is as follows, that halacha lemaisa, if you were to go ahead and hand something from one balcony to another, or throw something to one balcony to another across the width of the Rishus Harabim, you would be Potter. However, if the two balconies are on the same side of the street, but let's say the way the building is structured is the balconies overhang the Rishus Harabim, right? So the building is situated in Rishus Hayachid, but the balconies overhang into the Rishus Harabim, and you were to then go ahead and hand an item, one balcony to another. So we'll say in this case, the item is being transferred along the length of the Rishus Harabim, you would be Chayiv. You would be Chayiv. But if you were to throw the item, again, from one balcony to the other balcony, along the length of the Rishus Harabim, you would be Potter. Now, what is going on over here? So we'll say this is really quite fascinating. Shekach Haisa Avodas Halavim. Because remember again, everything in Shabbos, everything that is Asar on Shabbos, comes from what was done in the Midbar, comes from what was done specifically again by the Mishkan. Anything that was done either for the creation, construction, fabrication of the Mishkan, or as we're going to see, even the transport of the Mishkan, that becomes a model for Hilchos Shabbos. So ultimately, again, when it comes to Otzah, we're only chayiv if that which we are doing was done in the Mishkan. And I will say, what happened with the Levim in the Mishkan? So let's read it here, then we'll see in Rashi what's going on. Listen to this. Because this is what the Levim did in the Midbar. Shtei agalos zu achar zu birshus harabim moshitin hakrashim mizu lozu avalo zarkan. I will say, we're going to see where was Hotzah, right? Where do we find this in the Midbar? The Levim, last week's parasha, right? The Levim ultimately were given wagons. And there are many things transported on the wagons, amongst them the boards. So Rabosai, when they were deconstructing or really taking off the boards to reconstruct the Mishkan, what they would do is they would park the wagons by twos. So two in front, two in back. And what they would do is they would offload the boards through the back of the second wagon. Everything would be offboarded. So Rabosai, so again, the wagons, of course, we're assuming, were parked, so to speak, in the Rishus Harabim. So what do you have happening over here? You have the handing of objects from one Rishus Hayachid to another Rishus Hayachid, because the wagons themselves are Rishus Hayachid, across a Rishus Harabim. But I will say, and therefore, again, that's a malacha. But interestingly enough, it was handed along the length of the Rishus Harabim, not along the width of the Rishus Harabim, right? Because remember, again, the wagons are parked in twos, two in front, two in back, and everything is offloaded on the back of the second wagon. So we'll say this is really quite fascinating. This is why the Mishnah says, if you have two balconies facing each other across the Rishus Harabim, if they hand something or throw something to one another across the width of the public domain, you're Potter. You're Potter. Why? Because of Osei, at the end of the day in the Mishkan, we never found any type of Hotzah that took place across the width of Rosh Hazarabim. What we did find was an act of Hotzah that took, meaning I should say a transfer from one domain to another domain, from this case, from Rosh Hashayachid to a Rosh Hashayachid over a Rosh Hazarabim that took place along the length of the Rosh Hazarabim. So therefore, again, one would be chayiv in such a situation. Really quite amazing. So I want to say, so take a look. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, Potter. Rashi says, Shalom atzinu zrikavo shata b'malachas ha-mishkan. Furthermore, Gemara say, this also highlights as to why you're only chayiv if halacha l'maisa, you went ahead and you handed something. If you throw something, by definition, you're not chayiv. Why? Because there was no throwing that was done in the Mishkan. Right? Really, really quite fascinating. They didn't throw stuff. So because they handed stuff. So therefore, because they didn't throw anything, if you were to throw, you would be potter. So look at Rashi, potter. Shalom atzinu zrikavo shata b'malachas ha-mishkan mirushus hayachid rushus hayachid v'rachav rushus rab mafzik b'nayim. There was no case of hotzah in the Mishkan that took place across the width of a public domain. Because say the boards were never handed from one wagon to another wagon across. They were only handed from one wagon to the other wagon behind it. So Merari had four wagons, vein holken shtayim kineged zu b'tzad zu, and they would travel again in pairs of two. So two in front, two in back. So ultimately, again, when they would go ahead and deconstruct the Mishkan and load up the wagons, and when they would get ready to deconstruct the Mishkan, they would line up the wagons in twos, right? Two in front, two in back. And they would line it up ready to travel. So therefore, again, the wagons themselves would be positioned along the length of the Rishos HaRabim. She'erotzim lahalich achar amota anar holich lifneim uparki ha-mishkan hayu moshitin ha-krashim lo'osun shashti agalos. So we'll say they would deconstruct the Mishkan and they would hand the boards to the people standing, people deconstructing the Mishkan, hand the boards to the people standing on the wagons, hasmuchos la-mishkan ve'moshitin lo'osun shlifneim. So it's really quite amazing. When they would deconstruct the Mishkan, what they would do is people deconstructed, they would hand the boards to the people on the back wagons, and the people on the back wagons would hand it forward to the people on the front wagons. They would finish loading up the front wagons, and then the back wagons would be subsequently loaded up as well. So therefore, Rabbi said, this is really quite amazing. So halacha lemaisa, what we're seeing over here is as follows. This is why, if you hand something from a Rishos HaYachid to a Rishos HaYachid across the Rishos HaRabim, you're not chayiv. You're not chayiv. Why not? Because it's according to the Gemara right now. This ultimately, again, Rabbi Kiva says you're chayiv, but the Chum say you're potter. Right? Why? Because this is not the way the avoda was done in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, you had a situation of an item being handed from one Rosh Hashayachid to another Rosh Hashayachid with a Rosh Hasharabim in the middle, but only along the length of the Rosh Hasharabim, not along the width. So really, really quite, really quite incredible. So the Gemara says as follows. Fine, so we'll say, let's go right there. So that's the Gemara. That's the Mishnah, excuse me. So I'm in base. Michti. So we'll say, let's analyze. Michti. Zrika told the Hotzai. So we'll say, so remember again, the Mishnah introduced us today to the concept of throwing. So the Gemara says, Zrika, throwing an item, is a tolda, is an offshoot of the Malach of Hotzah. So we'll say, so let's assume for a moment that the Av, right, the Av Malacha, is actively carrying something from one domain to another. The tolda will be throwing something from one domain to another. So the Gemara says, "Hotza gufa hecha ksiva." So we'll say this is absolutely incredible. The Gemara says, "By the way, where do we find the malacha of hotza written in the Torah?" There was another reason why this is dramatic. Is we are 96 blot into Shabbos. 96 blot. How much time have we spent in this masechta on hotza I'll answer that for you, a lot. And now it's fascinating, I will say that for the first time in the Masechta, the Gemara is saying, by the way, where does the Malach of Hotzah come from? Right? In other words, we've been speaking about this from the beginning. I just want to point out, there's an incredible Musar in this. Incredible Musar. Let's say sometimes the key to ultimately being a good Jew is just following the Dvar Hashem. Although we love to understand everything, and we love to really, you know, understand the philosophical and theological and intellectual underpinnings of everything we do, sometimes the beginning of a meaningful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just being a good soldier. It's just ultimately doing what our Father tells us, doing what our King tells us. And then once you habituate yourself into that, and you're doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you, then you could say, by the way, what is this about? Right? Why exactly this? It was a chapter 96 plot of telling us that you can't do Otzah. We've graduated to level saying, by the way, where does this actually, I'm in. Where does this come from? So the Gemara is incredible. Amar Yochanan Amar Kra, Vaitzav Moshe Vaiviu Kol Machane. So this is incredible. So this is talking about by the Mishkan, but actually by the end of the construction of the Mishkan, or by the end of the collection for the Mishkan. So the Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu commanded, and they sent out a message in the Machane. Leimor, I'll just read to you the rest of the Pasuk. Ish v'isha ayasu od, Melacha l'chumas ha-Mishkan, Vaikalia am Mehavi. So we'll say, so the Gemara says as follows. So if I recall, Moshe Echan Hava, essentially what Moshe Rabbeinu put out was, he put out an announcement saying, stop bringing stuff to the Mishkan. Stop bringing anything. So that was the announcement. Stop coming and bringing your stuff. You know, I say stuff, I mean gold, silver, precious materials. That was the call. Stop bringing your donations to the Mishkan. So let's analyze. Moshe Hecha Havi Yosef. Where was Moshe Rabbeinu situated? The Machane Leviyah. Moshe Rabbeinu was in the innermost camp of Klal Yisrael, Machane Leviyah. Umachana Leviyah Rosh Hasharabim. Bar Machana Leviyah was a public domain. Anyone could go there. The Gemara said, "Vekamer Lo Yisrael Lo Sakifu Lo Safiku." The Teisim Rosh Hasayachid Didachu Lo Rosh Hasharabim. And what was Moshe Rabbeinu telling Klal Yisrael? I want you to stop bringing the items from your homes, i.e., Rosh Hasayachid, into the Rosh Hasharabim of Machana Leviyah. Okay, so the Gemara says, "My debe Shabbos koi." But how do you know that Moshe Rabbeinu was making this announcement on Shabbos? Dilma bechol koi. Maybe the announcement was being made during the week. Umishum deshlema lemalacha. And I will say, remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu was simply making. The Gemara is saying, how do you know that Moshe Rabbeinu's announcement had anything to do with Shabbos? Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu's announcement was Baruch Hashem, we've reached capacity for donations. Right, we reached capacity for donations that we can't accept anymore, and please stop bringing. And maybe it was just a Tuesday. Or how do you know? Or as well, say the Gemara's understanding that Moshe tells them to stop bringing because what he's telling them is you cannot transport items from your home Rosh Hashayachid to the Mishkan to Machane Leviyah, which is Rosh Hashanah Shabbos. The Gemara says, I don't understand. Who says? Maybe Moshe was just saying, guys, Baruch Hashem, we've reached capacity. Don't bring any more. We can't accommodate any more donations. Because remember, again, the Pasuk does say that Baruch Hashem, at a certain point in time, they did reach capacity for donations. Maybe that's what's happening over here. To which the Gemara says, amazing. Gamar ha'avar ha'avar miyom kippurim. So we'll say, there's a gzera shava of ha'avar ha'avar. It says, vaya'aviru kol b'machane, and by Yom Kippur it says, Vavarta shofar trua. You will go ahead and literally sound the shofar truma. In other words, you'll cause the sound to pass. So you use the same lashon of havara by Yom Kippur as by the statement of Moshe. Ma lahalon b'yom asr, afkan b'yom asr. Just like vavarta shofar trua is on Yom Kippur, a day that malacha is asr, so too when the pasuk says vayaviru kol b'machane, that was on Shabbos as well. So I'll say, so really incredible. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that the malacha of Hotzah also emanates, of course, from the Mishnah, with Moshe Rabbeinu making the announcement on Shabbos, please do not bring any donations on Shabbos from your homes to the Mishkan, for that would be an act of transferring an item from your home, Rosh Hashayachid, to the Mishkan, Rosh Hasharabim. So Ashkichan Hotzah. So we'll say, now I know Hotzah. Remember again, Hotzah specifically means taking an item from Rosh Hashayachid to Rosh Hasharabim. Hachnasa minalan. How do I know that it's also usher to take something from Rosh Hasharabim into Rosh Hashayachid? To which the Gemara says, Svarihi. Or it's logical. Or is why we'll say, once I know that one direction is usher, then of course the other direction is usher as well. Michdi, Mirishos, Lirishosu, Mali Afuke, Umali Alu, Iluye. So ultimately, I'm going to say, because it's a Svara. Svara is, once I know that Midda Araisa, you can't go ahead and transfer an item from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim, learning that from Moshe Rabbeinu, from the Mishkan, then of course I will say, once that's Aser, then of course it's equally as Aser to take something from Rishos HaRabim into Rishos HaYachid. To which the Gemara says, Mihu, Hotsa Av, Hachnasa Tolda. But I will say, what we will understand is, Hotsa, which means the act of taking something from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim, that's the Av Melacha, taking something from Rishos HaRabim into Rishos HaYachid, that is the Tolda, that's the option. And I will say, both will be Daraisa, but Lamaisa, the one that's written in the Torah is going to be the Av, and the one that's learned out, albeit from Svar, is going to be the Tolda. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Amai kari le Av? Amai kari lo hai Av? Vamai kara lo hai Tolda? So we'll say, now, both will be Doraisa, or it's an Isha Doraisa that takes something from Rosh Hashayachid to Rosh Hasharab, and from Rosh Hasharab to Rosh Hashayachid. So what exactly is the ramification of calling one of them an Av and one of them a Tolda? I'll tell you why the Gemara says, Nafkamina, di Avid Shtei Avos Bahadi Adadi, Inami Shtei Toldos Bahadi Adadi, Michayiv Tarti. Well, it makes a difference to the following idea. Why? Because halacha lemaisa, if you perform two avos, two independent malachos, let's say one lapse of awareness, you're going to be chayiv twice. Similarly, two toldos of two different malachos, you will be chayiv twice. However, v'i avid av v'tolda didei lo mechayiv elachada. But I will say, if you were to perform an av and its tolda in one lapse of awareness, you would only be chayiv once. So I will say, so therefore, again, for our purpose, what that means is as follows. If in one lapse of awareness, you were to carry an item from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim, that's Hotsah, and then again, in the same lapse of awareness, carry the item back from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim, an act of Hachnasa, you've done the Av of Hotsah, the Tolda of Hachnasa, and you would only be Chayiv once. Once. So that's why it matters to call Hotsah an Av, and Hachnasa a Tolda, to tell you that halacha maisi, if you did them in one lapse of awareness, you don't only be chayiv once. Ul Rabbi Eliezer, demechayiv a Tolda makom avamai karlu avamai karlu Tolda. But Skrin Rabbi Eliezer holds that no, if you perform an av and its Tolda together, you will in fact be chayiv for both of those items. So what is the ramification of calling one an av and one a Tolda? To which the Gemara says, Hach debahai mishkan chashiv karli av. Hach delo havi bemishkan chashiva lo kari le av. So we'll say, so according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's very simple. Av, or as we'll say, both an Av and a Tolda will be Asur Midaraisa. Av is the name that is given to the Malacha that we find explicitly in conjunction with the Mishkan, and Tolda is a derivative. So remember, again, when it comes, so therefore, Hotsah, transferring an item from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaRabim, that's the Av. Why? Because we find that explicitly by the Mishkan. Versus taking something from Rishos HaYachid to Rishos HaYachid, that's not explicit by the Mishkan, so we call that the Tolda. Inami, Hachtik Siva Kari Av, Vahai Delok Siva Kari Tolda, or the one that's explicitly written. So we'll say, so either it's the one that's found explicitly by the Mishkan that's called the Av, the derivative is called the Tolda, or the one that is explicitly written is called the Av, and the derivative is called the Tolda. So the Gemara says, Ay, Vahodis Nan, Hazorik Dalalamis Bekosel Lamalamiyut Tvachim, Kizorik Ba'avir. So we've actually seen this before. So what about the fact that we learn as follows? If one throws an object, so I'll say, and let's say again, the object comes to rest on the wall. So remember again, this is the case of the sticky fig. Right, so you go and you throw a sticky fig, and it hits the wall and it sticks to the wall. If it sticks to the wall, lamala miyud, above 10 tefachim, ultimately again, you're potter. Why Rabbi Osei? Because remember again, and we're going to get into this more, Rishus HaRabim only extends up until 10 tefachim. Above 10 tefachim is no longer called Rishus HaRabim. But ultimately, again, if the item comes to rest on the wall below 10 tefachim, that is as if it came to rest on the ground, then you'd be chayiv. Vazorik baritz dalet ames chayiv. So ultimately, again, similarly, again, if you throw an object dalet ames in Rishus HaRabim, you're going to be chayiv. Shabbos, I asked the Gemara, dalet ames b'Rishus HaRabim minalam de mechayiv. So the Gemara asked an interesting question. Where did I know that from? Shabbos, I remember, now what we're doing now here is we're trying to figure out where all of these halachas come from. So now we've discovered, where does Hotsah come from? Hotsah comes from the Mishnah. From the Mishnah, from, or I should say, from the Mishkan. Moshe makes an announcement on Shabbos, Don't bring any donations. Why not? Because bringing donations would mean you bring an object from your home, Rosh Hashayachid, to Machan Alevir Rosh Hasharabim. That's Hotzah. Once another Hotzah is Aser, Misvara logic dictates that if in one direction it's Aser, the other direction, i.e. Rosh Hasharabim to Rosh Hashayachid, will also be Aser. Fine. Now the Gemara says, and by the way, throwing an object, Dalet Amis, in Rosh Hasharabim is also Aser. Where do I know that from? Here we go. So the Gemara says, Om Rabbi Yoshia, Shekin Arge Yerios Zarkin Machtein Zelazel. Well, this is incredible. Because when they were fabricating the Mishkan, so you had people weaving the curtains. So apparently, I guess weavers would sometimes go ahead and share their weaving needles. So what would they do? So Reuven's sitting here, and this is all happening in Machan Levir and Shusarabim. So Reuven's sitting in one place, Shimon's sitting another Dalet Amos away. Shimon would say, Reuven, can I borrow your needle? Reuven would throw the needle Dalet Amos. Throw the needle Dalet Amos. Right? So that's where you find transferring an item Dalet Amos to be Asr on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Argin Machtan Lamaluhu. I'm sorry. Shekin Argin Yirios, Zarkin Machtan Zelazeh. I argin machten lamlo. So the Gemara says, really, is that true? That ultimately, again, the people, the weavers would share needles. Weavers don't usually share needles. Ela shekin tofrei yerios zarkin machten zelozeh. Rather, it's because the people who sew. So also remember, again, sewing was a bit more labor intensive than the weaving. The people who would sew would share needles. I v'dilma gabi hadadi habayasvi. But maybe they sat next to each other. How do you? Why do you assume that the sewers sat at a distance from each other? Maybe the sewers sat next to each other, and as such were able to hand the needles one to the other, to which the Gemara says, So ultimately, the Gemara say it wouldn't work. Why? Because if they were sitting next to each other, they would end up pricking each other with their needles. In other words, when you're sewing, your hand is moving. If someone's sitting too close to you, you end up hurting them with your needle. Okay, so maybe they weren't sitting next to each other. Maybe they were sitting within Dalet Amos. In other words, we'll say, how do you know they were spread out Dalet Amos? So says Rav Chista, going back. Rather, it's the people who were weaving the curtains. They would go ahead and throw, we'll say, Buchiyar is literally, again, the shuttle. The shuttle. The shuttle holds the spool of thread. So they would go out and they would throw the spool to each other. The Gemara says, I have a halo, ogdo, biado. But one second, even when you throw the shuttle, the spool of thread, often you throw it, you still retain some piece of the thread in your hand. So ultimately, again, that's not really considered to be throwing something in totality one to the other. To which the Gemara says, Benischa Basra, it's with the last piece of thread. So when the last piece of thread was around the spool and you threw the spool to your neighbor, you threw the spool in its entirety. That was an act of where they transferred something, item, they transferred an item, Dalet Amos and Shusarabim. I, Vahab Makom Ptur Kazla. But one second, at the end of the day, when they were weaving the curtains, the curtains were standing upright. When you were sharing a spool, you would throw the spool, right? You would throw the shuttle, in between the two curtains. The Rebbe said the area in between the two curtains was not Rosh Hasharabim. The area in between the two curtains was potentially a makom patur, an exempt area. So why would you be chayav for that? Ella shekin argin yerios zarkin buchiyar l'shoa lehen. Rather, Rebbe said what happened is, okay, here's what happened is, people would have an extra shuttle. They would share their extra shuttle, their extra spool with their neighbor. I v'dilma gabi hadadu haviyasu. But maybe they were sitting next to each other. The Gemara says, they wouldn't sit next to each other because at the end of the day they'd end up poking each other with their weaving needles. Okay. So the Gemara says, fine. The Gemara says, so maybe ultimately they're going to say, maybe they sat in a staggered fashion. So maybe the weavers just sat staggered. They weren't Dalet Amos from each other. They just sat staggered. They say they could weave, they could sew, and no one's hurting each other with their needles. For them, I'm say, when sewing or when weaving, do people borrow each other's instruments? Vahatanya, we learned Luda. Vahatanya Luda. Right? So the right Luda's taught as follows. Ish mimalachto asher hema osim. Mimalachtu osa ve'ina osa mimalechas chavero. I will say, furthermore, again, is you see the derech of craftsmen that went a craftsman comes to do his work, what does he do? He brings his own utensils. He brings his own shuttle, he brings his own needle, he brings his own thread. And ultimately, again, craftsmen are often not good sharers, right? So this one's doing his, which makes sense. This one's doing his work with his stuff. This one's doing his work. So who's to say they're even sharing? V'su, ma'avri dalet amas b'rishas rabim b'rishas minalan. So here's what's interesting. The Gemara made the assumption that we're learning out the prohibition to transfer an item dalet amas in rishas rabim in some way from the craftsman, right? So we assume that ultimately, again, the craftsmen are sitting in some proximity to each other, dalet amas away from each other, but they're sharing stuff with each other. So they must be throwing. They're throwing needles. Not much like a dangerous place to be, right? They're throwing needles. They're throwing shuttles. They're throwing this. They're throwing that. And that's where you find the prohibition to throw something dalet amas, which the Gemara says, I don't think so. I don't think that's actually what happened. I think at the end of the day, everybody brought their own stuff and did their own work. So if that's the case, so where do we find that throwing an object, Dalet Amas in Rishus Harabim is Aser, to which the Gemara says, Ella, called Dalet Amas Rishus Harabim Gemara Gemirila. Rather, Rav Ose says the Gemara, it's a Gemara. What does that mean? It's Tor Shavalpa. This was part of the oral tradition handed down to Moshe Rabbeinu, that Rabbi Say ultimately, again, throwing an object out of Amos and Rosh Hashanah will be chayiv. So Rabbi Say, so what comes out from the sugya, therefore, is as follows. What comes out is halacha l'maisa, the act of hotzah, transferring an item from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, sorry, from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah. That's learned out explicitly from the Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu telling the people, don't bring anything on Shabbos. That's Hotzah. Hachnosa, the act of bringing something from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah is Svara. If one direction is Aser, the other direction is Aser. And the act of transferring an item, Dalet Amas in Rosh Harabim, the Gemara says, Gemara. That is an oral tradition handed down to Moshe Rabbeinu, part of Torah Shabbat Peh. Shkar Chabas, we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up at the two Dasim Beres Hashem tomorrow. Tomorrow also we have a beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us. Shkach, wishing everyone a wonderful day. Those of you who are joining us staying on Zoom for the Minyan, I'm going to end this particular stream now, and we'll restart it in the shul parking lot in a few minutes. Yishkach, I will say.